Welcome to the Memo Show.
Hey, yo. Welcome to the Memo Show. Thanks for joining me. I need everybody to go and follow me on Instagram. If you listen to the show, go and follow me on Instagram. It's at TheMemoShow. The Memo Show. It's got an extra E in there. If you listen to this podcast on a platform that allows you to leave a review, please do that. I love reviews. Maybe I'll read some on the show, good and bad. I have a YouTube, same handle, at The Memo Show. And if you have questions or comments, or if you'd like to be on the show, share a story, share something creative you're working on, just email me. There's an email button on my Instagram. I'd love to hear from y'all. So without further ado, today I have the King of Kindles, Manit Pal. Manit Pal Singh, to be exact. He's got a YouTube channel, Manit Pal. And what he does is he reviews Kindles. So if you're ever in... I'm in no way affiliated with Amazon or Kindle. I just thought what he does is very interesting. He puts some very informative stuff on there. I'm not even a Kindle user, and I watch his videos. Oh, and he's written some books. One of which, after this interview, not because of this interview, but because he's awesome, became an Amazon bestseller. So he's got books too. Check those out. All right, remember now, folks, I can't do this without you. Go follow me on Instagram, leave a review, follow me on YouTube, email me, suggestions, comments. Manit Pal Singh, everyone. Hey, Manit, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. I'm starting this little podcast here, and I just wanted to have friends on to talk about the cool stuff that they do. And I see you online a lot, and I enjoyed where you've taken your career. I'm really impressed. I love watching your stuff, and I don't even own a Kindle.
That's always good to hear. I'm glad you like the videos either way.
It's so engaging, just because also, like, we used to work in an environment where we would have to teach people how to use the technology that they bought from us, right? So I remember you being very, very good at that and really taking your time with customers and really and showing them cool features and how to fish and like that. I feel like that was the thing that you liked to do the most, as opposed to all the other nonsense we had to do. Because I would always stop and listen to your interactions with customers, and you know, they were, it's just like watching your video. So it brings me back, and I think it's a really great thing that you're doing. I have a question, if you don't mind. So speaking of like knowing you in that environment, what guided you towards really pinpointing Kindle?
That's a great question. Well, thank you for the kind words, first of all. I really appreciate that context. It's been so long since we worked together, and just thinking back to those memories, it was like, in the moment, you don't see it that way. It's like frustrating sometimes, like having to explain things step by step. But looking back, I definitely realize now like how much I do enjoy seeing people like learn how to do things on their own and feeling that sense of independence. And I think with the Kindle stuff, it never really was Kindles originally. It was a long journey of discovering what my niche was. During the pandemic, I started making YouTube videos just because I had more time, and I feel like everyone during the pandemic was doing something on the side. And that was my thing. And around the same time at my day job, I was getting a bit, what's the right word? Unfulfilled. Yeah. I was no longer enjoying my job, and all my projects were getting canceled because of the pandemic. So it was kind of like a time where I just found this new thing on YouTube, and I really loved it. So It didn't start with Kindle. It started with random videos. I just made it a goal to post one video every week. And I actually started at the beginning of the pandemic, before lockdown officially started, I got a new ergonomic chair and I made a video about that. And that video, because of the pandemic, everyone was buying home office stuff. Right. That video really took off. And it was like my first sense of like, wow, YouTube could actually be this thing I do. Like, I love making videos and I never thought of it as something I could do as a job. It still isn't my full-time job, by the way. I still think of it as my part-time job. I still have a day job. But that was the first time I really felt like I could make it a business. And then I kept making videos every week. And then I bought a Kindle. Like, I started reading more often, like just for my personal hobby. And I made a video about that. And that video did well too. So I made the decision, like, let me make more Kindle videos. I didn't want to make more home office videos. Like, that didn't seem like something I can do long term.
Yeah.
But videos about books and reading and different kind of Kindles and stuff like that, that felt like something I could do. So I kept doing that, and one thing led to another, and that niche kind of became my thing, and that's where I am today.
Nice. So you just found the flow.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you can't like predict where these things will lead you. It's more of, you just kind of uncover it, and like, you trial by error almost, right? You just keep trying different things, and eventually, like, you have to trust the process. Like, if you keep doing it enough times, like, the right thing will find you.
You know, books have been around. How long have books been around? Thousands of years?
A long time.
Office equipment will come and go, you know, so I'm sure you could talk about books forever. But even before that, how did you get into video and editing and film? And I know you dabbled in that for a while. You could have been way more majorly into it than I know, but I know that you did work on some stuff like that.
Yeah. For as long as I can remember, making videos has always been something I was passionate about. When I was young, I would make these like home videos with my friends and cousins and just like stupid stuff to have fun and like express that creative side of me. Then I really got into like motion graphics and like learning how those tools and software work. So for some reason that was just something I always clicked with. And now that I'm a bit older and like I've like looked at my parents, I realized like my dad was really into photography and stuff when he was young, and like he was always the camera guy in our family. So I probably picked that up from him at some point. But
definitely,
before working, I in college, I was wondering like what I should major in, and my first instinct was like film. I went to UConn, which at the time, maybe they do now, but they didn't have like a film program. So I ended up not doing that. But I did a business degree. And about halfway through my college career, there was a new program that they added called digital media design. And that was way more into like the stuff I loved. So I did that as well as business. And I learned like editing, like in a more professional setting, again, motion graphics. Like we worked in a class called student agency where we did projects for real companies in the area where the campus was. So I always loved doing projects, and I even made a documentary while in college. Like I got funding through this program that UConn offered. So video stuff was always my passion. And then when I started working, that kind of took a backseat. I remember I would try my best to make videos whenever I could. Like I loved watching Casey Neistat on YouTube. He was a big inspiration for me, like his vlogs. So I tried making vlogs and I traveled and stuff like that. I got a drone. I kind of did all the stuff he did. That was a big inspiration for like trying out YouTube. And then that's kind of how I started on YouTube, was just making like travel videos, which eventually led to more like tutorial kind of videos. I wanted to take it a little more seriously and like help people. So yeah, the videos were always there. But the form of which I expressed that has definitely changed.
Well, I look at your YouTube page. It's so clean. It's so amazing. I checked it out yesterday and I was like, damn, you have a vision, man, and you are executing it. So I just wanted to give you kudos on that. Looks good.
I'm really glad that you think that, because for me, it's been like especially the thumbnails. I'm like, okay, what's this video thumbnail going to be? I just kind of make a face and like make the background look nice a little bit.
I mean, you just gotta,
it looks clean though.
Yeah, that, I mean, you just gotta fit into the algorithm, you know, that YouTube has. It's probably a lot more studying than doing at this point with YouTube. But no, man, it looks good. So, you wrote a book too. Wait, go back to your documentary. So I think I've seen that.
Yeah.
What's it about? Where can we look at it?
Yeah, it's called They Called Me Osama. You can just look it up on YouTube. It's available for free. It's a short documentary that I made while in college. I got funding through UConn, which was really awesome to do like an independent project. And my faith is a big part of who I am. I'm a Sikh. And during college especially, there was a big part of me that wanted to make a film about the identity of a Sikh. So I wear a turban, I have a beard, and we are often mistaken for being Muslim, or like people just don't know who we are. We just look different. So I made a short film to explain more about what the Sikh faith was. And I got to work with some really great people from different parts of the world. And it was just a really awesome experience. And that short documentary found a lot of success. It got featured in some media. I got to do some interviews and hold some screenings around the Northeast. And it was just like a really, really fun way to take my filmmaking skills to like a more formal level. Up until that point, it was just like my own fun projects, but this was more of like a serious thing. And I love that. So it was a great way to like advance my skill set a little bit.
Yeah, I remember that documentary. I learned a lot about your religion from that. That was the first time where I realized that, you know, lots of people get the shit end of the stick, and it's fucked up how people treat each other. I mean, I've seen it in real life, but, you know, seeing that documentary on how a whole people gets just mislabeled and judged, and horrible things happen, and I learned a lot about your religion by being comfortable enough to ask you questions, and it opened my mind to more things, and that, you know, understanding that it's so important to learn about the things that you don't know, because it just helps you be such a better person. And so I that documentary had an impact on me. I think about it a lot. You know,
that's awesome. I always appreciated that you like ask questions too. People are often like afraid to ask questions. So I remember that you were always curious in a very like empathetic and like genuinely want to learn more kind of way. And that meant a lot to me.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. I try to teach my kids that too. Like, if you have questions, don't be afraid to ask them, but, you know, think about the way you're asking them and think about who you're asking them to, and if, you know, they're comfortable with answering them, but, you know, question everything, and that's how you learn, you know?
Exactly.
Cool. So then that got you rolling. I mean, you've had experience before, you jumped into YouTube. So that got you going, and then you kind of found your niche with Kindle. I do all my reading on an iPad. I feel ashamed to tell you this, because I thought it was like the best experience. Like, I have a 12.9, and I have a usually like the keyboard, smart keyboard trackpad. It's usually mounted on there during the day, like when I'm doing work. But, you know, I pop it out of that sleeve and put it in the folio sleeve so I could take it and read. I do crosswords on it. Like, I do that stuff. But to me, like, Apple Books is all I really knew, you know, back from its inception and when it was just iBooks. But I thought that was the best way to read on a device. I didn't think there was that big of a difference with Kindle, but seeing, number one, how many there are, number two, how passionate the Kindle community is, and, you know, your videos are kind of telling me I might be asking for one of these for Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, look, we can talk about the debate of whether reading on a Kindle is worth that. This is a topic I could talk to you about for days and days. But the biggest thing it comes down to for me, and there's a lot of reasons, but the number one reason is distractions. if I read on a phone or an iPad, and I do that, I still do that because the Kindle app is available on all these platforms. And that's one of the biggest selling points of the ecosystem is you can read anywhere on anything. But right. having one device that could literally, the only thing you can do on an e-reader is read a book. And there are other e-readers out there that are not Kindle that like have other apps and stuff. And I usually oppose those, but the Amazon Kindle, like that specific one is the best, most popular one that you can buy. It literally only does one thing, and that's read. And when I pick up my Kindle, I am not going to get distracted by like wanting to watch a YouTube video or checking a message or browsing the web or Googling something. Like I can only do one thing and one thing alone. It's like the closest thing you can get to picking up a physical book.
Yeah.
And but all the advantages of technology. So that's the main reason why I choose Kindle. I don't want to have distracting other apps that tempt me. Like I have a kind of personality that if something pops up and I start thinking about something, I'll like tell myself, "Oh, just 1 second, let me just check this real quick." It never is 1 second. So I like in the mornings, especially when I wake up or at night before I go to bed, like that, the discipline is really important to me. So that's why I do it. But I know people who swear by their phone or their iPad for reading and it works just fine. So it really just depends on like your personality.
Those are great points because I believe I have probably finished more real books than I have books in my iBook library in the past 2 years.
That's funny.
Then yeah. So now that I think about it, you're probably right. I do love physical books. That's why I was like, and I usually, this sounds crazy, but usually I will go get the physical book or order it and download the digital one. I'll preferably use the real book. And then, you know, if I don't have my book and I want to continue reading, I'm like waiting for something in a waiting room, I'll open it up on my phone. But, and that's, you know, there's no syncing there. So I have to like remember exactly. where I was at and then, okay, I find it. And then it takes me a little bit longer to start reading going from a real book. But what about like blue light and stuff? Is that real? I mean, because I use the warm light feature on my phone and my iPad. But like, does it really make that big of a difference?
I don't know the science behind all of this. So like I can't like give you a researched answer, but I can tell you this. The way modern phones and like most technology works is there are LEDs shining lights directly into your eyes. With a Kindle or any e-reader for that matter, most of them, I think, they use something called front light. So the light is not shining into your eyes, it's shining onto the e-ink. So the lights are facing the other direction. So you still get a lit up screen, but it's not like pounding into your eyes. And it's literally like reading a book because the light is shining from the sides of the device onto the page. And e-ink is fundamentally different than LEDs or like OLED or LCD technology. It's like, it's literally the screen with like these ink molecules that go up and down to form letters on a page, and the battery lasts for weeks and weeks. Like you can have a page on the screen for a very, very long time without losing any battery because it's literally like the ink is just sitting there. It's not like projecting light.
So no burn in or anything?
No, that's the way e-ink works.
Whoa, that's pretty cool.
There is ghosting if you switch pages, and you'll notice like the refresh rate of e-ink devices are very different. Like it's very much slower, and you'll see like random flashes here and there. But that's because it's like wiping the screen clean and getting rid of the ghosting effect. But it's not like a burn-in. That's a very like modern tech kind of issue. Yeah. E-ink is like a very like dumbed down version of that. But at the same time, it's really cool how the engineering works.
That's awesome. I didn't even realize. I wouldn't have like made that differentiation. Like I said, I've known what a Kindle was, but I just never really knew exactly what it was. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to watch your videos and figure out which Kindle I'm getting for Christmas.
It's worth trying out at least once to see if you like it.
So what about like if I have all these books in Apple Books, can I move them over to a Kindle?
Funny enough, you're the only person that I've talked to in the 2 or 3 years that I've been making these videos that is like an Apple Books through and through user. So
I mean, that's all I know.
Yeah, which is like, you're really like catching one of my blind spots here, because I don't have much experience with Apple Books. I'm the same way with you. Like when it first came out, I didn't know anything about Amazon or Kindle. I loved Apple. So I used, I remember when the Steve Jobs book came out, the Walter Isaacson biography. I bought that on my iBooks app and I read it on there. And like I bought a few other books, and it's a really cool system. I just wish I used it more in like recent years. I don't know if there's a way to export those books. Probably not in a legal way, at least.
Yeah.
Like in some countries, like you're allowed to remove the DRM because you want to own that file.
Right.
But in America, that's not something you can do. So I find it probably hard to believe that Apple would let you do that. But that's something that's not just Apple specific. Amazon is the same way. If you buy a book on Amazon, you're technically locked in there too. So there's no clean way of doing that. A lot of people now are like trying to find independent booksellers where they can buy the book and own the file. Another very common thing that people are doing is borrowing books through their public library. There's ebooks you can borrow from your local library, which is really cool.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of ways
around
that.
I signed up for my library card recently here in LA, and it was like they have so much stuff you can just go to the website and download. And I was like, this is crazy. And the amount of stuff you could do at the library with the library card is insane. That's another story. But I was literally, I made an appointment to use their Octavia Lab in downtown LA, and you can literally go and digitize any analog like stuff that you have. If you have cassette tapes or reel to reel, like 8mm VCR tapes, anything you have, you can go and just sit there, book out a 4-hour window and just digitize stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah. Public libraries are totally underrated.
Severely. But yeah, they were telling me you just download whatever books into your e-reader, your Kindle, your iPad, whatever. Then they just expire, right? Basically.
Yeah. It's like borrowing a real book, but a digital version of it.
That's so awesome. Yeah. And if I were to get a Kindle this Christmas, and then talking about not being able to really have a quick and easy way to move iBooks over to the Kindle. I just watched a video of yours that showed all these great ways to get free books. Like like Prime has stuff for free every week, you said?
Yeah, I didn't know this until I researched this, but Amazon has a free section, which is really cool. Where you can get books completely for free. There's also like a 99 cent section where you can buy a book for $1. There's often sales that for really good books on there. But if you're a Prime member, you have access to Prime Reading, which is like, is basically like a library that run by Amazon. Like you can borrow books from their Prime library of books for free. And then if you're also a Prime customer, you get one free book every month from their First Reads program, which is like, they feature a set of books from different genres. I believe they're all new books that are just coming out, and they have like a special deal with the author to like feature it. Then you can get that book. And the cool thing about that program is you get to keep the book. So it's not just a borrow. You get to keep that book for the whole life of your Amazon Prime membership, I guess. So it's cool.
That's awesome. So you have a book. You wrote a book.
Yes, I did.
Tell me about it.
That was a spur of the moment decision. This was now 2022. I did this the beginning of the year in January. I saw this tweet, and it was this guy who it really made me stop and think. He was normally, when you think of writing a book, it's this very big project. Some people write a book that takes years and years to finish. But here's this guy on Twitter who is like a working professional. He's a project manager in the business world at a tech company. And he had published like a dozen plus short books, some of which became Amazon bestsellers. And he's making a sizable side income from these books. And he's just teaching stuff that he was knowledgeable about. And that blew me away. And he actually started making a course about, he wrote a book about this too, how to write a book on the side. And I didn't think much of it, but it's like, I've always wanted to write a book as like a like life goal at some point. So I bought the book and his course, and I went through it. And by the end of it, I decided I'm going to do this. Like, there's nothing stopping me. For like, my philosophy is like I love creating stuff, and there's nothing stopping me from writing a short book and self-publishing it. I don't have to make this a giant project that takes years and years. And that really inspired me to write my first book, which is called Supercharge Your Reading. It's a book that tells you how to use a Kindle to really level up your reading habit and use all the main features of it. And I wrote that book in like 4 to 6 months, I think. I forget how long. It wasn't that long. From start to finish, from like writing the first words to publishing it on Amazon to selling my first copy. It was a pretty condensed time period. And it's a really short book. You could finish it within an hour. It's like probably 11,000 words, something like that. And since then, I've written 3 or 4 more books, short books. And it's my strategy moving forward just to, like, alongside my YouTube channel, to keep publishing videos. But I want to build a portfolio of short books on topics that I'm passionate about and that I think can help other people. And so far, it's been a lot of fun. Like, I love making videos, but I also love to write. And I didn't know that about myself until I began writing my email newsletter, and I had a blog, and I just really enjoyed like writing about topics that interested me. Like, when I was in school, I never wrote about fun stuff, but now I can write about fun stuff, and I love doing it.
Yeah, tell me about it. School teaches us all the opposite things. No, but if you can give my writing friends that same advice to just shut up and write the book already, like, that would be great, because I know so many talented writers who feel that it's too hard to get their book published or their writing published. And I know it's possible. It's just a matter of sitting down and putting pen to paper. And then the rest is just what? You just have to basically upload it through the system, probably go through like a third party to get it in there, right? I'm assuming it's a
super
lot like
easy. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know how big of a debate there was between self-publishing and publishing. Like, everyone thinks of publishing a book, if you get a publisher, you have to like go through all these hoops. And then like, if you do get the publisher, you get like an advance and you don't really make much money afterwards. But I am like very much against that route at this point. I believe in self-publishing all the way. Like, Amazon's really cool. They just, because Amazon's the biggest bookstore in probably most of the world. You can just upload they have a system called Kindle Direct Publishing. You could just make an account and upload a book following their guidelines, and have your Kindle book published within a few days on your own without needing anyone else. They also have a version for print books. They have print on demand. So you can upload a formatted copy of your book for print. They have some guidelines for that, and they'll print your book for you, and they'll ship it for the customers that buy it on demand, which is really cool. So there's really no need there's no need to have a publisher anymore. Obviously there's perks of having a publisher, like having your like book translated or marketed for you, but the vast majority of books that go through a publisher don't make it too far. And that's why I use my YouTube channel as a way to build a community. And then I write books, and I have a way of, like, I have a small community of people who are interested in buying those books. So it's never like I'm selling something into the void. Like, I have people who are interested in it. And I also like try my best to share in public what I'm working on while I'm working on it, to build some interest and get feedback and like make something that people are actually wanting to read.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it, because like, everything's become fairly easy, like self-publishing, like putting my music on Apple Music and stuff like that. It's a breeze, you know. It's just, you have to know like the right way to do it. But then, you know, the other half of the work is promoting it, you know, like I think that's the biggest thing people forget about too, is promotion. How are you going to represent yourself? You know, is all your social media up to date? And I feel like that's more work than actually doing the thing that you want to show people, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Like the most disheartening thing is like you make something you're really happy with and proud of, and then you publish it or you put it out into the world, and you're not going to get much attention for it. And then with my YouTube videos, that's how it was for a long time. And I don't think I ever like really obsessed over that, but obviously, like you make something, you spend so much time working on it, and you keep doing it over and over and over again. At some point, you want to see like some return on that investment, unless you're doing it purely for fun without any expectation of it going anywhere. But like I was trying to make it a thing, so I'm very like privileged and lucky that I found a topic that worked for me and like I really doubled down into it. But it's a process. It takes time. It's definitely not like you just write something and publish it and like you're going to get overnight success. Like the chances of that happening are like very, 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 very slim. You have to put in the work and then build that community first.
Yeah, and just be consistent and persistent, you know?
Yeah,
Just
exactly.
gotta keep doing it. Man, so do you have a book on how to self-publish yet? A how-to book on how to self-publish?
I don't have a book on self-publishing. I could recommend a great author, the one where I've inspired from. His name is Hasan Osman. I think if you just search on Amazon, like writing a book on the side, he has a free book that you can download. I do have a book coming out very soon. I'm actually just wrapping up the edits from it. Hopefully, we'll have that done and published by the end of January. And it's a book about how to become a bookworm, like how to build a daily reading habit, because that is something that is a journey that I went through over the past 3, 4 years. And I know people struggle with like wanting to read more books, but actually doing that is a very different thing. So I'm putting together all my knowledge and tips and tactics into a short book to help people actually read more books next year.
That's great. I suffer from that as well, I guess you can say.
Yeah, I was like that too for a long time.
Yeah, during COVID I made it a goal to read one a month, and I think I did it for 3, 4 months. And I was like, okay, that's good. I know I can do it. I just have to keep doing it. I didn't keep doing it, but I know I can, so I'm going to make it a thing. I actually just bought a new book the other day, physical one. The Creative Act by Rick Rubin.
Oh,
Ever hear?
cool. I think I've heard of that one before. Is it something you started reading?
Yeah, it's pretty new, but he's a music producer that I've always admired as a producer myself. So it's like when he wrote a book, I was like, whoa, it's gonna be about like the Beastie Boys and Red Hot Chili Peppers, but it's not. There's no talking about music in it at all. It's basically how he himself, or he helps musicians and artists to find that creativity within them to make the things that they want to make and put it out into the world. So it's more about the process of creativity and where to find it and how to channel it and when to recognize it. And it's very interesting. It's in like short little spurts. It's not a story per se, but it's kind of like reading like a book about Buddhism, but it's all about creativity. It's really good.
That's really interesting. I think I've seen this book. Never go to a bookstore, but I just looked it up on Goodreads and I saved it so I can check it out later. But it looks
Yeah,
really
it's cool.
familiar.
It's cool, man. Well, thank you for talking to me. I appreciate it. Just one more question. So, I know, and you may have already answered it, but in your emails, you do put a lot of like, hey, I'm working on this. If you guys have feedback for this, let me know. But my question was going to be, how do you, when you get into a creative slump or you get to the point where you're like, crap, I don't know what to do next. I don't know where I'm going with this, or maybe you lose direction. Like, how do you really, you know, refocus yourself, reground yourself, and get to where you need to be, like for the next thing?
That's a great question. I think I have times of the year where I just lose that momentum. I'll give you the most recent example. And by the end of August, I moved, and that took up a lot of my mental energy and like time, and just it was like a huge project that took up a lot of my like working time. Like I had to take some time off from work and just focus on that. And then ever like since then, like I would say September, October, it was like a struggle getting back into the groove that I had built before then. And that's happened several times. Like there's just something will come up and then like I fall off the rhythm and then I have to like really put the effort in to get back onto a like a cadence again. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned is giving yourself permission to unplug. Like I think for a long time I was guilty of like thinking that was a bad thing. Like, why can't I maintain my work when this other stuff's going on? Like I have to work harder, kind of the hustle mindset. And that was not healthy at all. And then I have been coming more intentional about not working all the time. So like intentionally on the weekends, like not trying to schedule work for myself. But I think it's really just knowing yourself and like understanding what self-care means for you. And finding something that really excites you. Like for me, like I recently like got back on the rhythm that I had lost when I moved in the past couple months. And that was mainly because I was like trying to watch some inspiring creators that were doing some cool things and like talking to friends that gave me ideas for stuff that I could work on and like just having something to work toward and having some new ideas and perspectives and new projects that really got my thoughts and juices flowing. And that really motivated me to like schedule work for myself again and like actually want to do it. And so far that's been working pretty well. I'm going on vacation starting next week. And
yeah, I was going to ask you, where are you going?
My wife and I are going to Europe for 10 days. So we are very excited, but like internally, I'm a little nervous that I'm going to have to like work hard when I come back to rebuild the flow that I've been in for the past couple of months now.
You're ruining it for yourself. Don't do that.
But I think this is the healthiest I've felt about that. Like I am like genuinely excited. I am setting myself up for success. Like I'm making a bit of a plan for myself for when I come back, and I'm intentionally giving myself a few days to recover when I come back. Like I am being very thoughtful about that, and I'm feeling really good. I think it took a long time to build this relationship with productivity, and it's different for everybody. And like there's no one size fits all advice. You really got to like go through the process and find what works for your lifestyle and like what your needs are.
True. Well said. Thank you. I hope you have a great trip. Do you want to let people know where to get your books and see your videos?
Yeah, you can just go to YouTube and search my name, Manith Pal Singh, and you'll find all my content there. Usually in the link, or sorry, the description of those videos, you'll find a link to my newsletter and on my website, which contains my books and everything else.
Awesome. Well, thank you, sir. Have a great trip. Enjoy it. Europe is next on my list too. Don't know where yet, but I would love to do something like that. But thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
I like Garrett's butt, and I cannot lie. He's a really cool guy. When a girl walks in with an itty-bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get on the phone and you call up Garrett. And you're like, hey, dude, this girl just came in and sexually harassed me. Garrett's like, you file a lawsuit. And then I'm like, so I really don't care that much. And then Garrett's like, all right, dude, whatever. And that's it. And we go hang out. So the song. We just rock out all of them first. Garrett Rock.
You didn't think I would end a show without a Pete voicemail, did you? He was on last week. Check it out if you haven't. If you enjoy the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that lets you leave a review. Follow me on Instagram at THEEMEMOSHOW, The Memo Show. YouTube is at THEEMEMOSHOW. Shoot me an email. That button is on my Instagram. And go check out Manit's YouTube at Manit Paul, MANEETPAUL. And big thanks to Manit for coming on, talking about his passion. If you've got something to share, send me an email or send me a voice memo. I love voice memos. Just record a voice memo on your phone and send it to me. Comedy, short stories, music. Send me anything. I'll play it. That's what this is all about. Everybody tells me I need to get I need to find my niche, right, with this podcast. But I think my niche is I'm the podcast that you listen to when you can't figure out which podcast you want to listen to. How's that? You just put it on and you never know on the Memo Show. You just get whatever I feel like that day. So can't do it without y'all. Send me some stuff. Thank you for listening. And I'm going to leave you with one last little treat.
My name is Elijah Ortiz, a.k.a. Little Nugget. Oh.